Veritas Wealth is an independent financial planning business focused on managing wealth. In this series, we share hard-earned insights gained through years of experience at the cutting edge of financial planning.
I know, Barry, you have children that are at varsity age kids. I'm at the stage of my life where I'm running after small kids, and I'm also thinking more and more about the safety of aging parents. My father turned 71 just last year, I think it was, and both my in-laws have turned 70 in the last 10 months. And I guess it's a rite of passage where we're looking after those that are younger than us, and we're thinking about our aging parents that much more. And I'm lucky to have elders and youngsters around me. But navigating the needs of both generations is proving to be more than what I thought it would be. And I know you have parents too, that they live overseas. How do you manage that?
Yeah, so my mom turned 90 actually in December, and my dad is about to turn 86. They both live at home. My mom has got dementia, and my dad had throat cancer around 15 years ago and had his voice box removed. And in the last year, that tumor has come back. So we are in a very complicated situation now. And added to that, in our family, my oldest sister is mentally handicapped. So she's 60 now, and she's basically a 2.5-year-old.
Okay. Wow. Okay, well, in this episode, I really want to get down to the nitty-gritty, and hopefully you can help me navigate this really tricky path that we find ourselves getting to at a certain time of our lives. My wife is an only child, so she keeps looking at me saying, help me work and navigate this situation. You've mentioned a sibling. Do you have others that you sort of lean on, and your parents are overseas? What is that dynamic like?
Yeah, so I'm one of five kids. Okay. So obviously my older sister, and then there are twin boys who are 5 years older than me. They both live in Cork, quite close to my fair. Well, it's not a big city. So and then my younger sister is 2 years younger than I am.
Okay.
And she's basically the matriarch now of our family. Wow. And she kind of holds it all together. So, I mean, living far away is a big issue for me personally, because you're kind of racked with guilt, really. But my brothers and sisters have been very kind and gentle to me, and they said, "Listen, it is what it is. That's where you live, and there's nothing you can do about it. We know you're there for us, and you can support us in other ways."
Yeah, what I find quite interesting is that often we think about financial planning as literally just the numbers and getting things in files and making sure that they're in order. But where Veritas Wealth comes to the party is you consider so much more than just the numbers. Could you maybe share some advice on how you work through a situation? And you've already spoken about emotions and feeling guilty. How do you work through a situation where you and your siblings have different financial means? And how do we juggle looking out for parents with the responsibilities that we have towards our own sort of smaller families, our own nucleuses back home?
Yeah, so your first thing is your first responsibility is to your own family. And full stop, you know, it is what it is. Luckily for us, in our situation, two of the families, the kids are now in university. So actually, my two brothers have been freed up a bit.
Okay.
And they're more available, and because their kids have no demands and they don't want to see them anymore.
Right, yes. University. That stage of life, yeah.
So for me, the best piece of advice I've been given around this subject for anyone who's far away is, when you are far away and your parents start to, you know, things start going awry, your job is to support the people who are back home. Mm-hmm. They're doing the best that they possibly can. From time to time, there might be conversations where you're asked your opinion on something. Not always, but your job in general is to remember that your job is to support your siblings.
That's really good advice. Yeah. And being so far away, I suppose we do tend to want to jump in a little bit more. We don't quite see everything on a day-to-day basis. You find yourself asking more prying questions maybe from time to time, when in actual fact, the people that are close by and are doing the caring, don't forget that as a carer, they too need the support, as you're saying.
Exactly. And it's about conversations with them. It's around just asking questions, helpful questions that would maybe get them to think about other issues potentially, rather than saying, no, don't do this. And you're only, you know, everyone is very heightened at that time. Everyone is afraid. Everyone is worried for your parents. So you need to be very careful how you thread through this.
I believe it was last year that your dad was given a prognosis that didn't look very good. How did you guys deal with that?
Yeah, so the throat cancer came back and he ended up in hospital. He was sat down with the surgeon. And this is quite an important piece, actually, which we'll come back to, is that the surgeon said he could do this unbelievably complex and dangerous procedure. And my dad, who can't speak at the time, just waves his hands in front and just went, no, you're not touching me. That's it. Mm-hmm. And I just want to go home now. And I want to be cared for at home. And that in a way was scary, very scary for all of us, very a very sad moment. But it also gave us direction, because my dad had basically shown us this is the way it is. And he's now told the doctor directly.
And then dealing that with siblings and having that conversation about, you know, allowing for your dad to make those decisions and siblings being okay with it. Yeah. That's also not an easy one, is it?
There was another incident probably around 2 or 3 months later, and he had like a small skin cancer, which the doctor went in after, and it took a long time, and he had to go under an anesthetic again for this thing. Mm. And they came back and they said, no, we think we have to go again after. We think there might be a tiny, tiny bit left. And then we had conversations between the four of us, but never four of us sitting in one room around it. And at one point, one person would be feeling guiltier than the next. Yeah. And, no, we must do it and whatever. So we tasked one of the siblings to go to the doctor, sit down with the doctor, explain the whole situation, because we must all remember, and this is globally, no, doctors do not speak to each other. There's no central file that they all flick through before they meet you. So the skin person had no idea what was going on in the throat to the extent it was at. So when my brother explained it to the doctor, the skin doctor went, no ways. Well, we'll forget what I was recommending. Absolutely not. We'll keep an eye on it. Come back in 3 months.
Now, when it comes to having conversations with siblings and making sure that all of the family members are on the same page, you've already mentioned guilt. For one sibling to take the charge and to be in charge and to hold the fort is also really, it's a big ask, right? It's a big ask. Now, to get to the point where you have those difficult conversations, there can be times where the others are feeling left out, run over, bulldozed, forgotten about, disregarded. What would your advice be on how to handle a situation where there are multiple people involved that need to be on top of things and be on the same page? Do we get somebody else in to facilitate conversations for us?
Yes. It's better, obviously, if in our case, the four of us are on a group call together. Now the technology is available. So it's not like one phone call, then another phone call, which was happening with us. And now the four of us hop on a Zoom call or a WhatsApp call and discuss the issue collectively together, and then come to a kind of a conciliatory solution. Mm-hmm. That's the best way of doing it. What we did in our case is when that surgeon said, you know, that he wanted to do this hugely complex surgery, which my dad rejected, we knew he was in serious trouble.
Right.
So I knew a doctor in Cape Town called Cameron Bruce. And Cameron runs a business called Chariot Health, which is a home care, and they do a lot of palliative care work. So I asked Cameron to come on a group family call, a video call, and I knew there were conversations now that we needed to have ourselves, but I wanted to be a brother and a son. I didn't want to be a financial planner in that moment. Mm. And Cameron sat there and kind of facilitated a conversation. He talked briefly around the medical situation, but he actually said, look, I'm so far away, I can't comment really on this stuff. And the one thing that he did say is the when of all of these questions is impossible to answer. You never know. And then what he did was he talked us through scenarios around if we get into the palliative care situation, what it actually looks like and functionally, and what sort of services we should be actually looking at. And that was amazing because now we got taken from having a very sick person to now we're actually a caring, we're in a caring mode. So he built the bridge for us just to everyone has now landed. We're now in this situation,
right?
Which was very useful to have a third party to help us there.
And you've mentioned, of course, that you've got family living overseas. I've got aging family that's living up country. Mm. And our language models are very much the same. We all understand kind of what South Africa has to offer. But if you're talking about Ireland versus South Africa, maybe there are breakdowns in communication along the way sometimes?
Yeah, I got myself into trouble. Around 10 years ago, I went home and obviously I was dealing, as a financial planner, I was dealing with one of our clients that was getting ready to pass on. And so we do a lot of work in that scenario. And what happened was I went to my sister and I said, hey, my parents are now 75. And I say, hey, what happens with mum and dad? You know, where are mom and dad going to go when they become quite frail? And my sister turned on me and was like quite aggro. And she said, like, what are you going to do? Throw them in an institution? And do you know what happens to people who are in these institutions? I'm like, whoa. So I took out my phone, Googled like retirement villages in Cape Town, showed her some of the beautiful villages that are available.
Yes.
And she's like going, oh, okay. It's not like that at all here. Yeah. And in fact, there is nothing like that.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I'm very, very much aware of retirement villages here in South Africa, and they're dotted all over the place. And I would have thought overseas would look even more lavish or more taken care of.
I think the bottom line is the success of those things is around security, that older people in South Africa are more vulnerable. And it's actually a security thing that's driving them in.
That's so interesting. Again, our fear of something that is driving another thing. And sometimes our fear can come out in anger of these conversations too, which I think is going to be the overall message for this particular podcast, is to start having those conversations as soon as you can, when you're all in a position where you can think these things through and you're not having to respond in sort of a crisis mode.
Yeah.
Barry, talk me through some of the financial sides of things. I know you've said, you know, in certain scenarios, you wanted to be the brother and you wanted to be the sibling, but you are a financial advisor. How do you handle stuff like that then with your siblings and making sure that everybody's on the same page when it comes to understanding what needs to be in place? You have experience on both sides of the coin there.
So we were actually back around 3 years ago for their 60th wedding anniversary. So the whole family, all the kids, all of us in one place, which is very rare. And my wife and I were chatting, or my wife was actually chatting to everyone, all the other families, to actually see how they were all dealing with now having to give it a bit of time and extra care and taking care of my parents at home. And it ended up that there were clearly a number of absolute blanks on some major subjects here.
So you sent in the stealth, you got your wife to kind of do like some stealth.
No,
figuring
she did
out
it,
first.
She did it all on her own. and then, of course, I got landed with the bomb of you are heading with your brothers and sisters down to the local pub tonight. And we sat in a quiet corner and I was petrified actually having these conversations because I was afraid my sister was going to blow up in me again.
Yeah.
And what I did is I just took them through scenarios. So I just said to them, what if dad declines first? What if mom declines first? How are we taking care of my sister? And vice versa. And we moved it around. And then we played around with those scenarios. And then who can help? Who can do what? And who can jump in at what point? And then we kind of went, well, what's the financial situation? And we're an old school family. If you brought up money at dinner, like you were shot down.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
Quickly.
Yeah.
It was rude to have those conversations. So we have no idea what our parents' financial position is. And it was like, okay, so where's the will? It was my other question, and nobody knew where the will was. When was it last done? Is it appropriate now? And so we ended up, I ended up having another job the next day to go and speak to my dad, who's a very private guy and a very quiet guy. And I had to sit down with him and ask for permission to have this conversation with him. And again, I was very nervous that he would think that I've overstepped a mark. And I said, that, you know, we're just scenario planning just to see that we can make sure that you're okay, mum's okay, and my older sister is okay. So my dad actually was very organized, surprisingly organized. And he pulled out the will. He took me through all the investments and how his pensions work and how they would work after one person passing away and what the levels would be, where the bank accounts were, etc. So we had full knowledge now of what was going on. We took out the will. The will was out of date. It didn't take into account a few things. And then we looked at power of attorney and we decided that my sister, who's the matriarch, she should have power of attorney over my father's bank account in case he wasn't functional, so she could take care of my mum in that scenario. So we got down to real detail as to what was due, and then we had a to-do list. And again, I communicated, sent an email out to my brothers and sisters, this is what it's in place, this is what needs to be done. And now we need to go to a lawyer to get the power of attorney drawn up, and we need the will drawn up.
What I find interesting listening to you talk about how, I mean, each family dynamic is going to be different, but I don't think it's too far off to say that many families don't really discuss money and affairs like that. But there is something about having peace of mind, knowing that your parents have got things in place and knowing where to find them when things get to the point where you need to do so. There's a sense of, okay, I know what I need to do. I know which papers are important. I know which papers to look for. I know that these things are in place. So it's difficult to have that conversation and to pry, because it does feel like you're prying into somebody's exactly. private affairs. Mm. But hopefully for both parties, it's a sense of, okay, I've done everything that I can do. And now I know what happens when things get to the point where they're really needed. So conversations like that like this are really hard, but they're really good to have when you can still have them.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, if I reflect back now as a financial planner, looking at my story and our journey and whatever else is like, the most important thing is what you're doing now is, you know, 70, 75 is not old.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
You know, it's when people get over 80, then you really need to make sure you have had those conversations.
And as you quite rightly have said before, you can't predict what's going to happen. Yeah. But if someone slips and breaks a hip, you know, is what happens then, and we're far away, the only thing you can do as the partner to that person that slipped and broken hip is to phone an ambulance. And that's traumatic for you as well in that scenario. So as someone that's far away, what do I do? What do I call a palliative care place? Or do I phone, you know, the next door neighbor? What do I do? I can't get there in a heartbeat.
Yes.
And it's knowing that there's some kind of thought process that's been applied. And I guess through these conversations, you also start to figure out what has been put in place and what still needs to be put in place so that everybody knows, you know, where to from here.
Yeah. So if I come at this now from a financial planning point of view, so the overall message that you must take away from this podcast is with elderly parents, you need to be proactive. Okay. And the earlier you do this, the better. So I salute you and your wife for what you're actually doing.
We're trying.
No, but you keep going as gently as you can, and there's no rush.
Yeah.
So the first thing is remember the people who are guiding this and driving this are actually your parents, and you need to get their input when they're stronger and they're clearer mind and there's no panic around. And then the beauty of that is that it takes responsibilities away from the family, because now mom and dad said they wanted this. So now let's make sure that we follow what they said. So like my dad gave us a very clear thing of where they wanted to live. They wanted to live at home as long as possible. He said the type of care that they wanted, it was very clear to us, and at what point would he want that. The other thing to talk about is our medical conversations. And there's a great book called Being Mortal, which I would recommend to anybody that they read that book. It's a beautiful book. It's beautifully written by a medical doctor. And really, in the end, where the book goes is, when is enough enough from a medical point of view? Like, are we just going to keep going back into theatre, but their quality of life just continually declines? And one of the tips in the book is to describe what is the limit for them physically. So describe from a practical point of view, from a lifestyle point of view, when is enough enough? So maybe it's, you know, if I can't watch the rugby on TV and have a beer and eat biltong, it's not worth it anymore. Me.
Right, I understand. You know?
So if the operation, and you say to the doctor, well, if this goes wrong, and it means, well, it may impair his eyesight or whatever, you kind of go, well, actually, then we leave it because you won't be able to watch the rugby.
Sure.
As a simple example. So your parents are driving it. That's number one. Number two is you must go through, well, what is possible? And this is where you have to understand the financial affairs without prying too much. Mm. And then you have to have family conversations around, well, when will the kids get involved, or when will the kids have to get involved? And then you have to have a very tricky conversation around, well, who can do what financially? But if you can't do something financially, you might be able to do it by volunteering your time. Which was much more valuable to somebody else. And then have conversations around, well, what vendors do we bring in, and when do we bring those vendors in? The third thing is our more functional financial planning, and this is where you would have these conversations with Veritas, is, you know, how do I access the financials when needed? Is there a power of attorney in place? Do we have internet banking access? Does somebody have that? Are there trusts in place that we could actually access? And then who will hold the power of attorney? And do we as a family want to have rules around it so that we can just double check to make sure that it actually is in place? And financial planners can play a very valuable role here. And then conversations around, well, who's going to take care of the surviving spouse? Who'll take care of any dependents, like in our case, my sister? And then many people have animals. Mm. And like, who's going to take care of which animal? Like, what's going to happen there? And then lastly, obviously, is the will in place? And is the will appropriate?
As you list all of those things, I again am reminded around, when something happens to your parent, it's a traumatic thing. They could fall, like I've mentioned earlier, they could fall really ill. They could lose their lives. And for you as a child to have to go through that and then take care of these things on the side, it's a lot to deal with. And sometimes I suppose we don't necessarily think about those things because we choose not to. And what you're suggesting and what we're trying to do here is have those conversations up front, have them earlier while everybody can be involved. And as you said already, there's that sense where you've taken the responsibility, collectively made a decision or made collective decisions that you don't have to then go back and forth on once your parent has passed, as an example. And I can say that also having watched my mom and her sisters deal with my grand's passing, and how for a long time they just didn't know what to do with the things. They didn't know where things were. They struggled with getting rid of furniture. Do you get rid of this? Do you keep this? What about that property? What about these investments? I don't know where to find these things. And these conversations hopefully lay the groundwork for you to feel that much more comfortable understanding you're going to go through some form of trauma and then have to crisis manage. And all of this is such great advice. There are plenty of things here that you've mentioned that I haven't even considered yet, like the pet, for example.
Yeah.
What happens to the pet?
So overall, the overarching thing here is you actually have to have courageous conversations. Mm. You have to be brave. You have to be delicate in how you have these conversations. It's not that simple. I'll tell you a story. The four of us, very unusually, it sounds like we're in communication all the time. We're actually not. And the four kids were up at the local rugby club probably 9 or 10 years ago. And I was explaining, in conversation, we're having a drink, and I was explaining that I read the book Being Mortal just beforehand. And I was explaining what the book was about. And my sister looks at me. I could see her face kind of scrunching up. And she goes, "You're such a miserable so-and-so. Seriously, talk about death."
Well, we're out of the rugby
and
club.
And we all all four of us fell around laughing at the thing. Of course, I'm still the only person who's read the book. But it is funny. Keep those. So you will get knocked back. Yep. You will make mistakes.
Yep.
But I think people pick up that as long as you're being authentic and inclusive and allowing people, you're listening to other people as well, I think people respect that. My other tip would be, when it comes to the medical side of it, try and get the GP in on the center of it. So you actually have somebody who's holding the center medically and is actually driving that decision. And critically, they need to know what the parents have said about what their wishes are. And also, for those of us that live far away, remember, you are racked with guilt.
Yeah.
And often what happens when you speak to medical people about it, they're kind of nearly rolling their eyes, kind of, oh, you get the phone call from the people in New York or you get the people in Australia and they're phoning up and they are, you know, screaming down the phone at the medical people. But what the medical people realize is they're actually racked with guilt, but it's coming out as anger.
Sure.
But yeah. They're not actually angry. It's actually guilt that they're not actually here for the parents at this time. So keep the conversations going, even if you're told you're a miserable so-and-so.
Well, I don't think you're a miserable so-and-so at all, Barry. I think this has been very, very valuable. Thank you very much. I think for me, it's very much about having the conversations with the parents while they're strong and of sound mind and can help me navigate things. No parent wants to be a burden to their child. We fully understand that. And as children, we want to make sure that we're following through with our parents' wishes to the best of our ability. And conversations like these, they will need to be courageous, but they will be exceptionally powerful in the end for peace of mind. And knowing financial affairs, documents are in place, it's a great, great help. Thank you, Barry.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Veritas Wealth Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and visit veritaswealth.co.za for more on managing your wealth. Veritas Wealth. Real people, real conversations. A place where money and life meet.